This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Glad to have you with us. Back is Rory Pulaski. She is a DNR conservation biologist working with reptiles and amphibians. And we'll talk with her about Wisconsin reptile populations, species that are threatened, and citizen science project that you can help save, them with. And take your questions. What would you like to know about turtle behavior? Join in by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email or a photo to ideas@wpr.org. Rory, it's so good to have you back with us. It's been a long time.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Now, I think the first question that we need to ask is, what's the difference between reptiles and amphibians? We always get those mixed up.
Yes, they're always kind of lumped together. They're kind of creepy crawlies, so they're together. So our amphibians are the frogs and salamanders for Wisconsin. And, you know, they're when you picture a frog or salamander, they're typically, they have moisture skin. They typically need to be near water most of the year, or at least part of the year. And then the reptiles have drier skin. They generally don't need that same water source. And for Wisconsin, the reptiles include our turtles, snakes, and our lizards.
Okay, thanks for clearing that up for us, to remind us. I think we all kind of know, but it's always like, what was it again?
It was probably in high school biology, and everyone's forgotten by now.
Right. Well, we want to focus a little bit more on reptiles today. Now, those statistics that I quoted in the beginning there, 60% of turtles being endangered is pretty disheartening. Is that the case in Wisconsin, too? Do we have that big of a problem?
We do. You know, we haven't specifically looked at the number of turtles that are threatened, but we do have 11 species of turtles in Wisconsin, and four of those we have listed as either legally endangered or threatened, or another category that we call species of special concern. So four of our 11 are considered rare in the state. There's a variety of reasons the turtles are rare, but we're definitely seeing those same trends in Wisconsin as well.
And what about the other reptiles? Do we have problems there also?
We do. Unfortunately, the reptiles, just like the amphibians, are susceptible to a lot of things in the environment. The lizards, we have four species in Wisconsin. Three of those are considered rare. And then the snakes, we have 21 species in Wisconsin, and not quite half of those are considered rare.
And talk about the difficulties that the turtles are facing in particular. What is causing them to be threatened? And I know there's quite a few different things, but kind of go over some of those for us.
Sure. There are quite a few issues for them, unfortunately. One of the primary issues for a lot of our turtle species is that they take years to reproduce for the first time. So, you know, that's quite different than, if we think of birds, they're typically reproducing first or second year when they're 1 or 2 years old. Frogs are typically when they're a year old. But unfortunately, a lot of our turtles take up to 10 years, some even 20 years to reproduce for the first time. So if you picture the Blandings turtle is kind of one of the good examples in Wisconsin, that species can take, you know, easily 15 years up to 20 years to reproduce for the first time. So those females need to be on the landscape, avoiding any kind of threats, traffic, everything like that for 15 years before they can even begin to replace themselves in the population. And one of the biggest threats to turtles, as most people may have guessed, just driving around in Wisconsin, especially during nesting season, which we're just starting here for the turtles, is those roads. The roads in Wisconsin and throughout the world fragment their habitat quite a bit. And turtles imprint quite a bit or have what we call nest site fidelity, where they want to go back to the exact same nest site, typically where they were born. And they don't care what's in their way. So if they have, you know, several hundred feet, a couple miles they need to go, and there's no roads in between, or there's 10 roads they need to cross, they're still going to keep going to try to get back to that same site. So that's one of the biggest issues, is the roads, you know, just their natural biology, that it takes them so long to reproduce and they need to stay alive for so long. There's yeah, unfortunately, just a lot that's threatening the turtles.
It certainly sounds like it. And now I've heard of like little turtle tunnels and things like that being done. Is that is a lot of that being done, or is it just in a few places? And does it work?
Yeah. Yes, it definitely does work. There are, and we actually, we actually have a citizen monitoring project where citizens, anyone around the state, I use it myself, can report when you see a turtle crossing the road. And we use that information to, we compile that information, and then we work with DOT, and we'll be attempting to work with them even more in the future to find those areas across the state where there are really high mortality or even just turtle road crossings. And in those areas, we want to work to try to get those underpasses put in. And they do work amazingly well. They're most efficient when you can have a fence along the road, so it kind of guides the turtles to one area and guides them under the road and gets them back and forth, which usually when they're crossing those areas, they're crossing between a wetland or a lake or pond where they maybe spent the winter, and then their nesting area is someplace separate in the uplands. And so a lot of times getting between those two habitats, they would have to cross the road. So that is definitely an efficient method and something everyone can help with by reporting those road crossings.
And what is stopping us from putting more in? I'm assuming money has something to do with it?
It does. You know, they definitely cost a little bit of money to put in, primarily if they're put in separately, you know, if there's not a road project in place already. So what we're trying to do is to compile this information ahead of time so that we can work proactively with DOT and have that on our radar so that when there's already a road construction project going in, when they're repaving the road or widening the road, we already know about the area, and the costs are much less if we can put those specialized culverts in while they're already doing construction projects. And a lot of times these are maybe naturally low areas where there already would be a culvert that would be going in, so we just need to tweak the culvert design a little bit. So the more information we can have ahead of time, the better for us and for the turtles.
And the DOT is cool with you guys doing that?
Yes, yes. We have. We actually have one of my coworkers, and within the DNR is a DOT liaison with us with endangered species. So we work quite a bit with her, and she's in constant contact with them, too. So we're really, trying to highlight those key areas, and they're good partners to have.
Oh, that's great to hear. So let's talk about the different species of turtle we have in Wisconsin. You said there were 11, is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. We have 11 different species in Wisconsin.
And what are their names? This is a quiz.
Yeah, there's quite a few different kinds. We have 10 of the 11 are aquatic or semi-aquatic turtles. The rare ones that we have are the wood turtle. That is a threatened species primarily in the northern two-thirds or so of the state. The other two rare species are species of special concern, the smooth soft shell, which is found on large rivers, primarily the Wisconsin and the Mississippi, and then the Blanding's turtle, which is a species of special concern as well, and pretty recognizable. It has a pretty high dome shell. It's a larger turtle and a very, very yellow neck. And then the last turtle is our terrestrial turtle, which is the ornate box turtle, and that is an endangered species in Wisconsin.
So what should people do if we get this question all the time? They see a turtle trying to cross the road, and of course we want to help. Should we? And if we do, what's the safest way to do that?
Yes. Well, the first thing, of course, is to always make sure you're keeping yourself safe if you see them crossing the road. And if you do feel like you're in an area where you can safely pull off the road, or if you're walking and you feel like you can safely get to the turtle, do that. But, of course, keep yourself safe. And what we recommend to people, they'll probably see the most turtles this time of year. So we say generally from about May 20th through July 5th is the nesting period for turtles in Wisconsin. And so at that time, the females will be, the ones that are in the water will be moving from the water. And that's the time typically that we see the most road crossings. So if you see a female turtle or see a turtle at that time of year, it's likely a female. And she may be, it's actually pretty impossible unless you were to do, to really examine the turtle. It's hard to know if she's going to her nesting site or coming back from her nesting site. So the best thing to do is just to know and assume that the turtle knows what she's doing and move her in the direction she was going. So if she's heading away from the wetland, don't let that worry you. She's probably heading into the uplands to nest because she needs to find dry ground to nest. If she's going back to the wetland, she may be done nesting. She may have been moving in between wetlands. So the best thing you can do, keep yourself safe, get the turtle, and just take them across the road in the direction that they were going, and then just place them a few feet into vegetation on the other side of the road.
And yep, go ahead.
And the best way to hold the turtles is just to pick them up between their front and back legs, one hand on each side of the shell. Most of the turtle species won't be able to get their head around to bite, and just pick them up, carry them, drop them, and set them down. So we definitely encourage people to do that. Snapping turtles could be a little bit trickier. They have longer necks for protection. Their bottom shell is actually much smaller than most of the other turtles. They can't tuck themselves in, and so their better defense is kind of being very aggressive and bitey. One trick that we found, I think, from a zoo in Canada was to get the turtle. You can always get them to bite onto a stick or something and try to get them onto like a piece of, people have been doing this with like carpeting scraps or a piece of wood or just a floor mat in your car. And then you can gently drag the floor mat across to get them across. But they do bite quickly, so just be careful and maybe get that stick in their mouth so they have something else they're biting onto.
That's a great idea. I like the floor mat because we always have those with us.
You always have them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, we're talking about turtles and other reptiles with our guest, Rory Pulaski. She is a DNR conservation biologist. Do you need some help identifying a turtle that you've seen? Do you have questions about snakes or lizards? Please join in by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and Lee Rayburn is our technical director. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45, we'll talk to the author of a new guidebook about hiking with your dog in state parks of Wisconsin. Lots of great information if you like to hike with your dog. And right now we're talking turtles and other reptiles. So before we go to the phones, Rory, we've got a lot of calls coming in. Why don't you tell us about some of the projects that the DNR is involved in to help conserve turtles?
Yeah, so I had mentioned the citizen science project that anyone can help with, and you know, reporting those areas of high road crossings. But in terms of what we're doing internally within the DNR, a couple of the turtle projects we're working on. We have a few staff in the northern part of the state working with wood turtles, creating nest boxes to protect or nesting sites and nest cages to protect turtle nesting areas. Another project that we're working on in the southern part of the state is related to the ornate box turtle. And with that species, we're down to probably only about 8 sites or so in the state, definitely an endangered species for Wisconsin. And one of the issues with that turtle is they're so small. This is our completely terrestrial turtle. They don't use the water at all. And they're small. Their maximum size is about 5 inches or so. So we do have issues with poaching or just collection for pet trade. But even in terms of us trying to find the turtles, they're small. They can be really difficult to find. They're not going to be those obvious turtles on the lake that are basking because they're only in the dry upland areas. So we started about 10 years ago working with a man named John Rucker who uses turtle dogs. And these are Boykin Spaniels that he used to use for bird hunting. And one of his dogs one day found a turtle. He lived in North Carolina, I believe, at the time. And the dog brought him a turtle. And, you know, he was like, okay, yeah, good job. And then the dog thought he really liked it. So he kept bringing him turtles. And John is a retired high school teacher. And he started thinking, like, he could really use this for, you know, to help people find turtles. So it's become his summer retirement job. And so he has typically about 6 Boykin Spaniels that he brings with him. And these dogs are trained to find turtles. So now he has, you know, a whole crew of them. I know some people that do this kind of work with dogs use water balloons because these are retrievers. Mm-hmm. And they use water balloons when they're training them. So if the dogs bite too hard and pop the water balloon, they've failed and they're not ready to work with turtles yet. So these are very soft-mouthed dogs. And so we hire John for about a week every year to come to some of our ornate box turtle sites. And the dogs are amazing. We have quite a crew of people out there just to help with processing the turtles, weighing and measuring them. But the dogs really steal the show. We're definitely behind the dogs. The dogs are going out, finding the turtles. You know, you can kind of tell when they get on the scent of a turtle and where it's walked in the morning. And when they find one, they're retrievers, like I said, and so they grab the turtles, bring them back to us. And these are box turtles, which means they have a hinge on their bottom shell and they can fold completely into their shell. So they, you know, tuck in their head and their arms and their legs, and the dogs gently bring them back to us. We keep them for just, you know, a short time, measure them, weigh them, put them back. And the dogs, people have asked me if the dogs get treats or anything after they come back, and no, they are just so happy to get praise. That's all they get. So, but they find an amazing number of turtles, way more than the humans find.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, of course they do. They can smell so much better.
Right.
Oh my gosh, how much fun is that? I love it. Well,
yeah.
let's go to the phone. We've got Jim in Cedarburg who has a question for us. Hi, Jim.
Thanks, Jill. Great job you do. Last week, about 10 days ago, I saw what I thought was a baby turtle, about the size of a silver dollar. And it was making its way to our creek, which was about 100 yards away from the house. But my question outside of what time might have been, this is the first year I'm observing No Mow May. And I'm thinking, you know, I might have had the lawnmower out that day. It could have been a casualty of my cutting the grass if I wasn't thinking in those terms. But do we have any adults that are just the size of a silver dollar?
So those are likely, that's a great question. Those are likely, my guess would be painted turtles. And yeah, we normally think of No Mow May for anyone that's doing that as helping the, helping the pollinators. But in this case, yes, it could have been helping the turtles. And The painted turtles, actually, so the females lay the eggs in June-ish, and about half of the turtles will hatch out in the fall, so September, maybe into October. And then the other half of the turtles, depending on when their nests get laid, a lot of those eggs will hatch out, and then the hatchlings will actually stay underground for the winter and then emerge the following spring. So people do, in certain areas, do either occasionally or routinely see those tiny little turtles in, like, late April into May, depending on how warm the year is. And those are likely turtles that were laid last year, and that's probably a painted turtle that's just starting to make its way back to the water for the very first time.
Okay, great. Thanks for that call, Jim. Yeah, I had no idea that they stayed around over the winter. That's really cool.
Yeah, yep. It's pretty amazing. Not all the species do that, but some of them will do that.
Mm-hmm. If you've got a question about a turtle or another reptile or even amphibians, we'll go out on amphibians if you want to. Rory is our specialist. She can help you with that. So give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And in fact, Bill in Oregon sent us an email, and he asked, what can people do to help turtles besides helping them to cross roads and highways? And are there any groups working to help turtles, wetland preservation, other approaches?
Yes. Yeah, so there are some groups that are working on turtles. Some of them are local groups. You might want to check in with your any nature centers near you. They may be doing work. A lot of the work that people are doing right now is focusing on trying to keep those nest sites protected or just keep the habitat suitable. One of the issues that we saw in the article, Jill, that you had mentioned on turtles is just the loss of habitat for them. And one of the primary pieces of the landscape that the turtles are keying in on when they nest is open sandy areas. And so with not having fires historically go through as much as they historically did, a lot of those nesting sites that were sandy and open are getting filled in with brush and even trees, vegetation. So a lot of work is really focusing on trying to keep nesting areas safe for them. There is also the Natural Resources Foundation in Wisconsin does quite a bit of work with amphibians and reptiles as well. And they partner quite a bit with the DNR. But there are definitely people around the state that are doing that kind of habitat work where we really need to get those nesting areas protected.
Okay, great. Thank you for the call, Bill. Appreciate that. And we also, we have a call from Matt in Rudolph. Hi, Matt. What's your question?
Hi. My question is this. I have 40 acres of property, old pasture land, high water table, and I'd like to put a pond in. And I'd like to have that pond really be suitable for turtles, and other reptiles and amphibians and animals that are coming there. But I'm wondering if there's any recommendations for that as far as the size, how deep it should be, what I should think about as far as shoreline, anything like that would be useful.
Okay, great question, sure. Matt.
Yeah, so one of the, a lot of the shape of the pond will not matter. We usually say to try to keep the pond as varied as possible, so it's not just a perfect circle, but kind of make some little bays and areas, jagged edges along the side. One of the primary things for amphibians and reptiles, especially the ones that overwinter in the water, is you want to keep that pond deep enough so that there's sufficient oxygen in the water, even if the top of it freezes. So we recommend doing at least 3 feet deep. And that's obviously going to fill in over time. So if you do it a little bit deeper, that would even be better. And if you can keep the keep some of those shoreline areas natural, maybe keep an area of low vegetation. If the turtles come to the area, they'll have an area to nest then. And one important thing for amphibians in particular is to keep the pond fishless if possible. And the fish, any kind of fish can be a large predator of amphibians, their eggs, even the adults, depending on the size of the fish. If you're looking at getting turtles in the pond, they do eat the fish. So it's kind of a balancing act, partly depending on which species you're really hoping to attract. And be careful with any kind of herbicides or chemicals you use. Make sure they're wetland approved and safe for amphibians and reptiles, which there are some if you need to use any. And really just keeping a variety of natural habitat there. Any kind of down logs, that's great for the turtles to nest on. Keep as much natural habitat there as possible. So there's contiguous habitat, between that and any wooded areas. Just keep as much natural habitat and a buffer around the pond as possible, and then really try to focus on that 3 foot depth, keeping the pond at least 3 feet deep.
Okay, thanks for that question, Matt. Rory, if he builds it, will they come? How do you get turtles to come to your pond? I mean, I had two ponds for years and I never did get any turtles. Lots of frogs, but no turtles. So what can you do to make it more welcoming?
Yes, it's definitely if you build it, they will come typically. And the frogs generally are the first species that most people get. If the pond is in a good area and there's frog populations nearby, I know people have gotten frogs to show up within a few months, even depending on the time of year. Turtles definitely can take a little bit longer just because, as I mentioned earlier, they do imprint on their general area. So they can take a little bit longer. Yes, making it as attractive as possible, keeping those down logs, just keeping a variety of habitat there for them is going to be attractive to them.
And I would assume transplanting a turtle you happen to see on the side of the road to your pond is probably not a great idea?
No, unfortunately not, because partly with the imprinting of those animals, I've heard anecdotal stories about people picking up turtles, you know, moving them hours away, and someone finds the turtle years later, like halfway back to where it came from, and still trying to get back to that spot.
Oh, that's just sad.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, we are concerned there are more and more amphibian and reptile diseases that are in the environment or in the pet trade. And so we don't want to mix populations. We wouldn't want to have a turtle from one area put in another area. It's possible that one location had kind of adapted to a disease and was able to deal with it, but the new population might not be able to deal with it. So the best thing for sure is just to create really good habitat, keep it there, and hopefully the animals will show up in a short amount of time.
Sounds good. And let's go next to Lou Ann in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hi. My question is more of a concern. Are you hearing me?
You sure are. Go right ahead.
Okay. There was a local area around here that was noted for a lot of turtles. The farmer tiled the land. They tiled their land into this particular water area, and the turtles slowly were dying, and now there aren't any turtles at all. Has this been addressed with farmers tiling their land into waterways, rivers, and so forth? Because we do know there's pesticides, herbicides, things that can be detrimental not only to wildlife but to us. So I'm just wondering, I would like to know what your concerns are regarding that, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Luann. Rory?
Yes, that is definitely a concern. And I work primarily with endangered species laws. So some of the water staff at the DNR may be able to better answer that question. One of the issues we have is that we only have legal protections for the rare turtles. So if we're looking at sites where there are just painted turtles, snapping turtles, the more common species, we don't have as much legal protection for those species. So tiling the land, yes, that's for folks that don't know, tiling an ag field is typically a wet ag field, and tile lines or PVC piping is put in the soil to help drain it, and then those tile lines drain into typically some kind of a channel on the edge of the ag field. So that definitely changes the hydrology of an area. And ideally, even when those are put in, the change would just be that the wetland may be in a different area and that the turtles could migrate to those other areas since they're close by. But the chemicals definitely are a concern and have been shown, certain chemicals have been shown to impact turtles. Again, there are some herbicides, chemicals, pesticides that are considered safe for amphibians and reptiles. So trying to switch to those could be helpful as well. But it's definitely a concern and something people are watching.
Okay. Thank you for bringing up that topic, Katie. Appreciate that. Or actually, Luann, I'm sorry. Katie is our next caller, and she's in Fond du Lac. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hi there. How are you today?
Well, thank you. What did you have for us?
I have a suggestion for those who may be a little faint of heart who want to move snapping turtles out of their way. I keep a plastic snow shovel in my car, and it works excellent as a turtle scooper and turtle encourager. So it's worked well for me, and I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Great. Thank you, Katie. That should work, shouldn't it, Rory?
Yeah, I love that turtle scooper. That's what I'll have to call my winter shovel now.
I think so.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yep.
I love that idea. And in that same vein, we have Paul in Menominee who has another suggestion. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Time and time again, you see people trying to get big snapping turtles off the road or out of their driveways and so forth. And the way to safely move them is to throw a blanket or a coat over them so they can't, and then they can't see, they can't get their head around, and then you pick them up on the side of their shelves, and then you can move them move them quickly, and you can carry them wherever, and it really works well. So many times I've seen people not knowing what to do with big snappers that are on the road or in
okay.
a driveway or something.
All right, thanks, Paul, appreciate that. Rory, comments?
Yeah, I haven't tried that before, but that's a good suggestion. I know for a lot of mammal studies, you know, the animals, to calm them down and to make them less less scared. They cover them briefly, you know, cover their eyes, and that typically calms the animal down. So yeah, that's a good suggestion. I may try that someday.
Well, it's nice that some of these suggestions are things that we probably have in our vehicle anyway. So they're useful, that way. So thanks, Paul. Appreciate that. And we did get a call from Mark. He couldn't stay on the line with us, but he is reminding us that when rescuing turtles, that we should make sure to get off the road, put flashers on, also bring a flashlight. Important to stay safe. I'm sure you agree with that.
Yes. Anything you need to do to keep yourself safe. That's, yes, obviously the most important thing.
For sure. Okay, let's go back to the phones. We've got Doug in Madison with a question. Hi, Doug.
Yes. My question was about snakes. I moved up here from Nebraska about 20 years ago, and down there I would often see a garter snake or some kind of snake in my yard, or sometimes other snakes, like maybe once a bull snake. I have lived in Madison in a semi-suburban area for 20 years, and I've never seen a snake. And I'm just wondering, are they rare in the cities? Is it a gardening thing or a yard care thing, or is it just, are they just more rare up here?
Okay, thanks, Doug. Rory, are they just good at hiding?
It's probably a combination of all of those. They are good at hiding. We do, I know in Madison, we do have, I have gotten several reports of garter snakes within the city. And a lot of our other smaller species that are more common, brown snakes, red bellies, the garters again, they should be getting into some suburban areas. But again, the habitat is definitely a bit of an issue, you know, if a lot of people are using chemicals that are detrimental, or if there's a lot of habitat fragmentation, they won't be, you know, won't be quite as common in those areas, but I would definitely keep an eye out for them depending on exactly where you are. You know, they should be around. We definitely have some in the cities, but as you get closer, you know, more into the cities, center of the cities, they're not as easy to see.
Right. And that brings up another topic. I mean, what are some good practices for cities to help with the reptiles and amphibians that are living in them?
Right. So one of the best things to do is, you know, again, just make sure any herbicides or chemicals you use are the kind that are safe for amphibians or reptiles. And a lot of times the wetland approved herbicides will work for that. So those are typically pretty good for amphibians and reptiles. And, you know, you can do a lot of your own Google research, looking up whatever type of chemical, if you're needing to do that. And if people are looking to attract animals, you know, a lot of times having like any kind of log pile, or, you know, we actually do surveys for a lot of our snakes by putting down cover objects like a piece of plywood that can attract the animals, and helping the animals, you know, even we think of the turtles migrating, but not so much the frogs and salamanders. But a lot of times those frogs and salamanders are going to be migrating as well. And in areas where there's high curbs, you know, curbs don't seem high for us, but if you're a little, you know, 1.5-inch toad that can't really jump, they can really have a hard time in some of those areas. So keeping an eye out, you know, keeping lower curbs if possible, the more gradual sloped curbs will allow frogs and salamanders to get over them more easily. Anything, I guess, just picture yourself as a small little animal, you know, anything that could be a barrier to them. And, you know, if you live in the city, you don't have as much flexibility with you know, building a pond or anything like that. But the more natural you can keep your environment, you know, put in a native prairie in an area or a native shade garden, and that can really encourage any animals that are in the area that may attract them and provide good habitat as well.
Great suggestions for those of us who want to attract more. You know, I see turtles and snakes quite a bit, but it's rare to see a lizard, at least in my case. Is that usually kind of true in this state?
It is. People, when I tell people we're doing lizard surveys or even just talk about lizards, people are shocked that we have lizards sometimes in Wisconsin. Yeah, we do have four species. None of them are found statewide. They all have pretty narrow ranges. A lot of them are in the driftless area, so kind of like La Crosse to Madison to Eau Claire, Black River area. We do have one species of lizard in Wisconsin, our one endangered lizard, the slender glass lizard, which is a legless lizard. So it looks pretty similar to a snake, and people get them confused once in a while. But yes, even for myself, I have to really be out kind of hunting for lizards to find them. So most people will not come across them.
So they are more like rocky areas? Is that kind of where they like to hang out?
Yeah, generally rocky areas, dry areas. You know, I know your next guest will be talking about state parks. There's definitely some in state parks people can be keeping an eye on. But yeah, generally kind of bluff prairies, any rocky areas, dry areas, that's where the lizards will be found.
Okay, good to know. And now as far as identification goes, are there any great apps for your phone? Are there books that you recommend or websites so that if we, you know, snap a picture or see one and we'd like to identify it, where should we go?
Yeah, so we do have some photos on the DNR website, and we do have contact information on there for either myself or one of my coworkers that can help with ID. There are some apps. I honestly haven't used a lot of them. I know a lot of people are using the Seek app. S-E-E-K, and that's pretty good for plants. I've tried it a little bit with amphibians and reptiles, and it isn't super close all the time, but that could be another option to try. But we're happy at the DNR to take photos. They're one of my favorite types of questions to get is to try to figure out ID for animals, so we're happy to take those as well.
Okay, so they can just send them in to you?
Yep, that'd be perfect.
All right, and so do they just go Google DNR and Roy Pulaski, or
yes,
okay,
they could do that. If it's even easier, they can Google DNR amphibians and reptiles,
okay,
and that will come to the main amphibian and reptile page, and then there'll be a contact
perfect
information on there.
Perfect. Well, yep. Roy, it's been such fun talking with you. It's always such a fun topic of reptiles and frogs and all that good stuff. So thank you for taking time out. I know you're so busy out in the field these days for coming in to talk with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. We've been talking about reptiles with Rory Pulaski. She is a DNR conservation biologist. Stay with us on the Ideas Network, because we will be right back to talk about hiking with your dog.